giving me this long speech, and then I said, oh, you should talk to Simon if he comes. And you didn't came. But indeed, well,
So you are involved basically
in Chinese life.
Yes, it's kind of a cultural
problem.
So, yes.
From both in one, he used to do kind of simulations.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was super necessary.
But you were not there yet. When you met, you were just listening at the time.
No.
Are you already
there?
No,
for like 2 months already.
Yeah.
In your German? You're German from?
So let's get started. Welcome everyone to the second quantum gravity seminar of this week. And we're happy to have Susanne Schneider visiting us from Erlangen, and she's going to tell us about quantum cosmological back reactions.
Yeah, thank you first of all for the introduction. Thank you all for being here and also for the invitation and giving the opportunity to present my project on back reactions in theories of quantum cosmological perturbations.
Does it work now? Is it better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, this talk is about implementing back reactions in quantum cosmological perturbation models. And I'm going to introduce a new approach, which is inspired by space adiabatic perturbation theory. So this talk is based on a work with Thomas Thiemann in Erlangen, and also partly with Jonas Neuser, former bachelor student, and who is also in the audience today. So, let me just give you a quick overview. So first, I'm going to review quickly the status quo in quantum cosmology, and then what happens if we include cosmological perturbations. In a second step, I'm going to review in a very simple manner the standard Born-Oppenheimer approximation for a molecule. And then generalizing to the theory of space adiabatic perturbation theory, which we'll then use in a fourth step in order to compute back reactions from inhomogeneities in quantum cosmology onto the homogeneous background. Therefore, we will also need to prepare the full canonical system in such a way that we can really implement space adiabatic perturbation theory tools. Okay, so then let's get started. So as CMB measurements suggest, symmetry-reduced models of quantum gravity or gravity should give a good picture of the universe as a whole in early phases, times of recombination, or even in the present phase at very large scales. There are numerous approaches for quantum cosmology. And I can't mention all of them, so just I was citing a few of them. String theory inspired approaches, path integral approaches, spin form cosmology, and canonical loop quantum cosmology. At the same time, observations indicate that there are deviations from this homogeneous and isotropic picture. And the first step in order to include these inhomogeneities would be to construct perturbative quantum field theories on fixed cosmological backgrounds. The pioneering work in this respect was done by Lifshitz in 46 already. And he was introducing generic perturbation fields for metric and meta content in order to describe universe at the large scale. However, it was noticed shortly after that this approach was charged with gauge issues. So since we performed first the a split into homogeneous and inhomogeneous degrees of freedom, the covariance structure is not preserved in, this picture, and even fictitious perturbations can appear if we perform generic coordinate transformations. Then in 83 first by Sasaki and improved by Mukhanov in 88, there was the idea to introduce gauge invariant perturbation fields, at least for the scalar sector. However, since we are introducing transformations for the perturbative sector only, these approaches are charged with, so the canonical structure of the whole system is broken if we take also the homogeneous background as dynamical degrees of freedom into account. Mena Marugan and collaborators improved on this in 2015. By introducing gauge invariant scalar perturbations as before, so Mukhanov-Sasaki variables, but then improving the transformations and also introducing second order transformations in the perturbations for the homogeneous degrees of freedom, such that in this approach, the canonical structure of the whole system is preserved at least up to second order in the perturbations. And I want to mention that there are also other approaches for constructing gauge invariant observables, also up to higher orders. So in this approach, we were using the idea by Mena Marugan and collaborators. And as soon as the theory of perturbations on these backgrounds is settled, we can try to evaluate these perturbations on quantum cosmological backgrounds. However, up to now I didn't talk about back reactions, and by back reactions here I mean that we compute back reactions from the inhomogeneities onto the homogeneous sector of the theory. And probably most of you know, but there has already been a great, a big discussion about back reactions, at least in the classical sector. On the one hand, from Buchert and collaborators, and Green and Wald on the other hand. However, if we go to a quantum theory, the problem is even less understood. So now I'm going to talk about the approach that we are using here. So this is an approach inspired by a standard Born-Oppenheimer approximation for coupled systems, which include subsystems with very different rates of change. And the idea for the systems we have in mind is to use the gravitational coupling constant on the one hand and standard model metal coupling constants for our scalar field here, which should differ by 10 to the minus 32 orders of magnitude. So then let's just quickly review standard Born-Oppenheimer theory. So we exploit, in this case, for a molecule, the very small mass ratio of electrons and nuclei. And if we consider the standard molecular Hamiltonian in Schrödinger representation, we see that for the nuclei here with configuration variables x and for the electrons with configuration variables y, that the small parameter epsilon comes together with the kinetic energy contribution of the nuclei. So as the structure of the problem suggests, we could first consider only the electronic part of the system and try to look for eigenvalues of this of only the electronic part of the system. If we are lucky, we can find these eigensolutions for the electronic part only, so wave functions for the in the electronic Hilbert space with associated eigenenergies, but most importantly, they are now in this picture, in this simplified picture, depending parametrically on the configuration variables of the nuclei itself. Accordingly, we could construct the projection operator, depending on X as well. And if we now want to know if these subspaces associated with one of the electron subspaces are also invariant under the dynamics of the full Hamilton, we can first promote by means of a direct integral this projection operator on the full Hilbert space, which is just the tensor product of two two spaces in this simplified case. And we see that indeed these energy bands associated to one of the electron subspaces are almost invariant under the full dynamics up to order epsilon. In order to extract the dynamics then for the nuclei, influenced by these fast eigensubspaces of the electrons, we could first project on a simpler reference, a simpler space associated to this electron energy band. And also in a second step, what Born and Oppenheimer did was to perform a unitary transformation to the nuclear space such that we can extract the dynamics for the nuclei directly. So at the end, they constructed an effective Hamiltonian for this problem, which acts only on the nucleus Hilbert space. So this is the result, standard Born-Oppenheimer result. And just to emphasize that here, we again recover the kinetic energy contribution, but now an effective energy contribution, which depends on the fast electronic subspace that we have chosen before. However, it was noticed shortly after that this approximation is only valid for a restricted time scale. And one would like to improve on this. So the idea was then by Spohn, Teufel, Panatti, and Hövermann to use the space adiabatic theorem, which states that under certain mild conditions onto the structure of the system, and I will talk about this later, there exists a projection operator associated to one of these fast eigenspaces such that this projection operator commutes up to infinite orders in epsilon with the full Hamilton operator or constraint. Panatti, Teufel, and Spohn use this in order to construct a straightforward perturbative scheme for back reactions from one of these eigenstates of the fast subsystem onto the heavy subsystem. And in this picture, Born-Oppenheimer approximation simply corresponds to the zeroth order approximation scheme in space adiabatic perturbation theory. The construction works as follows. So inspired by the work by Born and Oppenheimer before, we first construct a projection operator as a formal power series in epsilon, which commutes up to orders epsilon to the k plus 1 with the Hamilton operator. In the next step, we compute this, yeah, more technical, for technical reasons, the unitary operator, also as a formal power series in epsilon, in order to project the dynamics on a simpler reference subspace. And then finally, we compute the effective Hamilton operator acting on this simpler subspace. Okay, so yeah, before I go into the details about our specific project, I want to mention that space adiabatic perturbation theory is indeed very well suited for the kind of problems that we have in mind. First, we have a wide range of applicability. There are assumptions that need to be satisfied, like local energy gaps between these fast eigensubspaces or the generic structure of the Hilbert space. But there are several ways in order to adapt these conditions to the problem that you want to consider. Also, I want to say that the concrete analysis is performed with a deformation or phase-based quantization scheme, which simplifies the analysis in a huge amount. And as an example, I want to give the Dirac particle with slowly varying external potentials. And this example could not be worked out by means of standard Born-Oppenheimer theory. Here we really need the full formalism in order to compute the back reactions from spin decrease of freedom of the particle onto the translational motion in some slowly varying extensional potentials. Most importantly for our case is also that we can apply the formalism to constraint systems, so we don't need a time variable. Okay, so then let's get prepared for the application for cosmological perturbation theory. So the space adiabatic formalism in itself had initially been developed only for quantum mechanical systems. So before we can apply it to the field case that we have in mind here, we need to meet several challenges. First, we need to talk about generic problems that occur due to the infinite number of degrees of freedom in these problems. Then the tools that we need in order to solve the first issue will imply the occurrence of indefinite mass squared values, and we need to talk about that too. And also at the end, we will see that non-polynomial operators for this effective Hamilton constraint for the homogeneous degrees of freedom will appear. Okay, so here I will first introduce the system that we have in mind. So standard cosmological perturbative system. We take a four-dimensional manifold, perform ADM formalism, and restrict the special hypersurfaces to compact three toroid. We introduce gravity with cosmological constant lambda, gravitational constant kappa, and a scalar field phi with mass and coupling constant lambda. Okay, so then we perform the standard split in perturbation theory into homogeneous sector, which means scale factor, the Laplace function, and the scalar field phi zero. Then we introduce perturbations thereon, first the special metric, and we restrict to scalar perturbations and tensor perturbations. Also Laplace and shift function and the scalar meta field perturbation here. In the first step, we take the same steps as Halliwell and Hawking already in their pioneering work about Hamiltonian formalism for these perturbative systems. We expand the action up to second order in the perturbations, perform Legendre transformation, and get a Hamiltonian constraint up to second order in the perturbations. However, here I didn't talk about gauge invariant variables up to now, so we will need to introduce perturbations transformations for the system in order to have, at least at the linear order, gauge invariant degrees of freedom. Also, due to this artificial split in the system, we'll obtain new secondary constraints, but this problem can be solved also by means of generic transformations. And as soon as we want to talk about quantum theory, we also need to take care about the Hilbert-Schmidt condition, which is, for this setting, not satisfied. Okay, so then I will first talk about Hilbert Schmidt condition. So as you might know, due to the infinite number of degrees of freedom in the system, we have a problem associated to the representation of the field while algebra. So in principle, associated to different masses of the field, we will obtain physically inequivalent irreducible representations for our system. And as an illustrative example, I switched here off just the metric perturbations, simply considering the perturbations of the meta-Hamiltonian. And so this is simply a standard Klein-Gordon-like structure of the field perturbations F and its associated conjugate momenta pi f. And we see here that if we define an effective frequency for this field, we see that it depends on the background, so on the scale factor here. However, as I was mentioning, this is problematic since as soon as we want to evolve these fields on the background, we will have fields with effectively different masses, and we do not know how to intertwine them unitarily. And this can be seen simply by computing the action of the momentum associated to A onto the vacuum state in the Fock space that we simply have chosen as a first step. So the point is that as soon as we move on this on the homogeneous background, we obtain an infinite a creation of an infinite number of particles in this setting. And perhaps we see directly from the structure of the problem that in this case the A dependence of this Laplace term prevents the finiteness of the above norm. So the first idea could be to simply rescale the fields, so multiplying by A and then doing the inverse transformation for the associated momentum. However, this is a bit problematic because now the new fields depend on the background degrees of freedom as well, so the canonical structure is broken. And the idea inspired by Mina Marugan and collaborators is to consider more generic transformations for the whole system, and so keeping the canonical structure up to second order in the perturbations. In the first step, we therefore perform a standard transformation to Mukhanov gauge invariant Mukhanov Sasaki variables at the linear order only. Also, we introduce the linear constraints associated with lapse and shift as new canonical variables. And this will prevent the generation of new additional secondary constraints for the system. And then we restore the canonical structure that we had broken before because these Mukhanov-Sasaki variables also depend on the homogeneous degrees of freedom. So if we perform this transformation from the previous variables. The idea is then to transform the homogeneous degrees of freedom as well by adding second order contributions in the cosmological perturbations. These transformations should also meet the Hilbert-Schmidt condition simply by considering transformations of the this form. And also, if we are not careful, there will be additional terms due to these transformations, which are not densely defined on Fock space. Okay, however, we can find such transformations. And then we are almost prepared for the application of space adiabatic perturbation theory for these cosmological perturbation models. So just to say again, the linear quantum constraints are now trivially solved since they are simply canonical momenta in this setting. And the only remaining constraint, which is of interest for the dynamics, is the standard cosmological perturbation theory constraint consisting here of a zeroth order part associated to standard FRW cosmology, and second order parts associated with the scalar Mukhanov-Sasaki degrees of freedom and the gauge invariant tensor degrees of freedom here. Okay, so then we have this Hamilton constraint. And in the next step, we need to introduce the adiabatic parameter into this system. So in this case, for gravitational metasystem, we define this epsilon squared to be the ratio of the gravitational coupling constant and the standard model meta coupling constant. So we search for all occurrences of kappa and lambda in the Hamilton constraint, replace these by epsilon, and we see that these epsilon appears in a non-trivial. Yes?
Just what is the coupling in this context? You have a free scalar and you have gravity, so what is lambda? Yeah.
So lambda is not the mass, it's just the coupling constant that appears for the scalar field. If you write down the action, you will have some coupling constant for the field. So this is
like an interaction, like a 5 to the 4th term, right? I don't know.
No. So wait, is there somewhere? Chuck? Sorry.
So it's not just.
Yeah. So in the standard cosmological setting, so cosmologists in general set it to 1, and only you could put it to 1 and say. So kappa is then just 8pg, and we have then the small ratio simply by given by kappa. But yeah, so if you write down the action, it's just a global factor for the.
So I put a lambda in front of the matter branch.
Exactly, that's it.
Sorry, I'm confused. Kappa is length squared.
Yes.
So lambda has to have dimensions to make it.
Yeah, but so in this case, we simply choose lambda in a way that it has the same dimension. So you can obtain it just by rescaling then the field by some.
So some dimension associated to the field.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So let's. Get restarted. So yeah, we considered this Hamilton constraint now with these non-trivial appearances of our adiabatic perturbation parameter. And since we want to consider the full quantum mechanical problem, we perform a generic wild quantization, which is just the standard symmetric quantization, indicated here by this W. Okay, and I didn't mention before, but due to these transformations that we are performing in order to get the Hamiltonian ready for the quantum analysis, we will obtain effective mass values for the Mukhanov-Sasaki system and the tensor system, which depend now on the homogeneous phase space. But this happens already if we perform standard Mukhanov-Sasaki transformations. So this is not due to these additional transformations in the homogeneous sector. Okay. So then I want just to give a very quick introduction into the technical realization of space adiabatic perturbation theory now, which we're going to apply to the Hamilton constraint that I was showing just before. So. As I was mentioning briefly, this works by a deformation quantization scheme. So in a first step, we rescale the canonical momenta of the homogeneous sector by this perturbation parameter. But this is just a technicality. Okay, we then perform a Wigner transformation with respect to the homogeneous sector only. So what we obtain thereby is a Hamiltonian symbol, if you perform this for the Hamilton constraint, which is nothing but a phase space function, so depending on the homogeneous phase space, with values in the space of linear operators on the perturbative Hilbert spaces. And as you see here, we have just these fog-like perturbative fields. So here we simply choose a symmetric fog space for the perturbations. Okay, so we have now these symbol functions. And in order to keep the quantum mechanical structure, we need also to pull back the operator product of the homogeneous sector to the phase space of the homogeneous sector as well. Here I just show you a wild-ordered star product, which is this pullback from of the operator product onto phase space. And we see that at zeroth order, we obtain the simple multiplication of phase space functions. And in higher orders, we will also obtain non-trivial contributions in the perturbative parameter epsilon. And also including, and this is important for the next steps, these depend on the Poisson brackets on the homogeneous phase space, so including derivatives with respect to these homogeneous variables. Okay, so if we come now to the concrete application, before going into the details, I want to review the concrete procedure. So first, we Wigner transform this Hamilton constraint, the full Hamilton constraint with respect to the homogeneous degrees of freedom, obtaining these phase space functions on the homogeneous phase space with values in the linear operators of the perturbation field fog space. And now, most importantly, these states depend parametrically on the homogeneous degrees of freedom. So just like in this standard molecular example, where these fast eigenspaces or the fast eigenstates of the electrons depended parametrically on the configuration variables of the nuclei. Okay, then just as in Born-Oppenheimer, we first construct a projection operator, choosing one of these eigenspaces associated to the fog quantum number that we are considering. And then we perform space adiabatic perturbation theory. We first construct as a formal power series in epsilon these projection operators, which commute up to desired order in epsilon with the full Hamilton constraint. In the next step, we also construct this unitary transformation, which is just a tool in order to simplify the analysis of the effective Hamilton constraint, which we then construct in the last step, also dependent then on the on the eigenspace of the perturbative system that we have chosen before. And then including, just as in the Born-Oppenheimer case, the back reactions from the inhomogeneities onto the homogeneous degrees of freedom. Yes? So, yes, if we take.
Only the energy of the.
Sorry?
Only the eigenvalue will be the energy of these states.
Yes, but the point is that we are on the compact torus, so we have discrete eigenvalues, in fact. However, it would even be possible with a small, I mean, with technical, with a, yeah, with more effort technically for a continuous spectrum to construct these kind of projection operators, but then we, I mean, we need more refined resolvent strategies in order to construct these symbols. But here it's, yeah, it's in this sense very easy because we are just on the compact three torus. Okay, so let's come to the results. So I show you here the first, the simplest zeroth order Born-Oppenheimer contribution. So intuitively, we obtain just at zeroth order the standard FRW contribution. And for reasons of simplicity, I only show you the case for vanishing potentials. So you could set m phi equals zero and vanishing cosmological constant. Okay, so this is standard FRW contribution, but then we obtain also typical Klein-Gordon-like energy contributions from the perturbative fields. And so the first contribution from the Mukhanov-Sasaki back reaction, and also contributions from the tensor degrees of freedom. And importantly, these energy, these energy contributions are finite, since we only consider the case of a finite number of non-vanishing excitations of these perturbative fields. Okay.
So,
yes.
So what is that assumption? I mean, k goes, I mean, arbitrarily high. C has some cutoff, and that's why it's finite, or why is it finite?
The point is that in this setting, we consider only the back reaction of one of these discrete eigenenergies onto the homogeneous background. So you also, yeah, I mean, in principle, if you consider excitation of very high wave numbers, you would have here very high contributions. But we assume that the excitation for which we consider the back reaction is finite. So these n and nms and nt values are only non-vanishing for a restricted number of k's. So you see they depend here on k, and they are non-vanishing for most of the k. They are vanishing for most of the k. So that's why we only consider finite energy contributions.
By assumption, because that's
yes, yes. But I mean, in principle, you can do this computation for every possible excitation, and then you will have back reactions from all possible eigenstates of the perturbations.
I have a very basic question.
Yeah.
The eigenstates you're considering are linear combinations of different k's, or you're
yes.
talking about the
yes.
k?
No, no, okay. Are linear combinations, yes. Okay, so the most generic possible eigenstate then you can consider. So just take a few n's that are non-vanishing, and then you can sum them up as you want, as soon as they are non-vanishing only for a few numbers n. Okay, so this is a zeroth order Born approximation, but the interesting part is now the contributions in higher orders. And therefore, I just want to come back once again to this Moyle product, which is at the core of the construction scheme. And we saw some slides before that if we construct the Hamilton constraint at higher order, there will probably be derivations of these perturbative eigenstates with respect to the homogeneous degrees of freedom. And I just want to give you this very brief formula here. So the point is that these derivatives mix up different eigenstates with different wave numbers k. And this is also why here the wave number k appears in the sum, and we will have non-trivial contributions a priori from many different k values or wave vector excitations. Okay, and I've already written down actually our result for the second order contribution. So first order contribution vanishes, but we obtain non-trivial results for the second order perturbations. So I colored these blue just to show you that these contributions here in k, so summing over all different wave vectors k, come from these derivatives of the fast eigenstates. So actually we have here phase space functions depending on the homogeneous degrees of freedom, respectively for back reactions from the Mukhanov-Sasaki modes and the tensor modes, depending partly on these perturbation quantum numbers that we have chosen before, and on the wave number also. And also these mass terms, effective mass terms associated to Mukhanov-Sasaki and tensor modes. Okay, so I give you now the concrete evaluation of these functions. So just in green here, these are the second order contributions, and these are the zeroth order Born-Oppenheimer contributions from two slides before. So you see again, we have the standard FRW contribution, the bare energy contribution from the fields themselves, and then we have non-trivial back reactions at second order from these perturbative states onto the homogeneous background. And so first of all, we need to talk about these sums appearing here, and also about the structure of the functions. And most importantly, we see from the structure directly that even if we switch off the modes, so if we would consider the back reaction from a vacuum state onto the homogeneous degrees of freedom, so setting all these n, t, n, m, s in all parts here equal zero, we would even have a Casimir type back reaction contribution in this case, because here we have these one parts appearing. And yeah, just as a side remark, so concerning the order of magnitude of perturbations, we didn't analyze the dynamics yet, but we see that we have indeed contributions without which appear at zeroth order in epsilon, so this contribution and also these ones. So it might appear that in fact these contributions are not negligible. Okay. If we consider now, for example, this bare Casimir term, just to simplify in the first step the analysis, so this will be the first Hamilton constraint that we consider, we see that non-polynomial functions of both the configuration and the momentum variables appear in these constraints. So here, for example, as you see, and also we have these nasty square root contributions in the mass terms, which had these non-trivial dependencies on the background degrees of freedom. So in the first step, we now need to analyze this Casimir term contributions, simplifying these integrals, and also find a dense set of vectors, which is then invariant under the under all the considered operators that appear here in these Casimir term type back reactions. Okay, so then I didn't talk yet about these mass values. And as you might see here, they appear here in a non-trivial manner, and it might even happen that these mass terms become smaller than zero because we had these non-trivial dependencies on the phase space. So indeed, there are regions in the slow phase space, so the homogeneous phase space, for which these mass squares are smaller than zero. In the model that I just presented before, we performed a canonical embedding to regions in phase space where these mass squares are definite positive. So in a way, we resolved this problem by restricting phase space. This is a priori unjustified, so one would like to improve on this, but at least these phase space regions, these restricted phase space regions, contain the kernel of the classical homogeneous constraint. There is a way in order to improve on this, and indeed we could review the transformations considering in a first step for the gauge invariant variables in order to really use variables in which these mass square values are positive definite. Also, one could restrict to certain numbers of wave vectors, but this is physically not motivated. Yeah?
I mean, isn't the tachyonic case the most interesting?
Sorry?
Where, I mean, the tachyonic case is kind of the most phenomenologically interesting, because that's where the inflationary fluctuations are.
So you mean cutting off k values?
Oh, no, I mean, you want them, right? I mean, that's why you get that's why you get amplification of quantum fluctuations during inflation.
Yeah.
In those tachyonic modes.
Yeah, so probably this could indeed have effects, so due to the quantum structure that we are considering here. And yeah, maybe, so we will see that we should keep this structure and see what happens if we evaluate these perturbations on the background. Yeah, so might, yeah, absolutely. Okay, and yeah, so I'm almost at the end of my talk. I just want to quickly review possible upcoming projects or projects that are already in progress. So first of all, we would like to review these canonical transformations that we performed at the beginning for the preparation of our Hamilton constraint and find possibly a positive definite mass square values for the whole phase space. Then we can, in a first step, treat the Hamilton constraint classically, just to learn about the generic dynamics and to learn for the quantum analysis in a second step. We also, I didn't talk about this yet, but in the first step, we computed back reactions only from the zero mode of the inflaton field onto the homogeneous geometry. So we could first solve these problems and see to which extent back reactions are important in this case. So then, of course, we want to analyze the solutions of the Hamilton constraint, not only the Casimir term, but in first step, the Casimir term, but secondly, then the full constraint. And so then at the end, it would be, of course, very interesting also to numerically evaluate these perturbations on these modified backgrounds using standard class codes, for example, and compute at the end primordial scalar and tensor power spectra. These computations were done up to second order in this adiabatic perturbation theorem. So first of all, it would be interesting to go to higher orders in this adiabatic parameter epsilon, but also to build the bridge to approaches where gauge invariant variables had been constructed also up to higher orders, not only restricting to linear order in the cosmological perturbations. Then I want to mention that similar methods had been used by Thiemann and Stottmeister already in 2015 without the split into homogeneous and inhomogeneous degrees of freedom, so taking full quantum gravity and adapt these space adiabatic tools to this case. So it would be interesting also to come from the full quantum gravitational side and to close this gap between cosmological theories and full quantum gravity. And also, a further interesting project is application of space adiabatic perturbation theory to quantum mechanical systems, which modelize thermodynamical systems with a restricted number of degrees of freedom. So yeah, this is also work and shows again the wide range of applicability of space adiabatic perturbation theory. So then let's just summarize. So I hope that I convinced you that the space adiabatic formalism is indeed very well suited to compute back reactions from inhomogeneous degrees of freedom in the cosmological setting onto the homogeneous degrees of freedom. We studied several different models, starting with homogeneous and isotropic models, computing back reactions from the zero mode of the inflaton field onto the homogeneous geometry. We were also considering deparametrized models where a scalar field appears as the perturbation decrease of freedom. And at the end, we computed the full system, including gauge invariant variables in the scalar and tensor sector. We obtained non-trivial back reactions from the perturbations onto the homogeneous sector. And it will be very interesting to analyze them analytically and also numerically. So even if at the end we see that these back reactions will not have huge effects on the dynamics of the background, this is interesting. For example, one could derive in a very systematic manner a quantum analog of BKL conjecture. And at the end, also there's the possibility to compare our results with observational data. Okay, so yeah, then thank you for your attention.
I have one question. So you mainly deal with a Hamiltonian, which is, I guess, an integrated Hamiltonian constraint. So it's one constraint, but
yes.
Lots of others, which at some point you say, well, they are linearized.
Yes.
But if you do higher order or higher order in epsilon, shouldn't you also care about nonlinear parts of these constraints?
So, perhaps I first didn't, so importantly, we have two different kinds of perturbation theory entering here. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, cosmological perturbation theory, and there we need to talk about these constraints if we go to higher orders. So exactly this would be, interesting to look what happens if we use perturbation schemes in higher order cosmological perturbation theory.
So I guess, so here you do things with linear perturbation theory, and then on top of that, the space adiabatic approach.
Yes, exactly.
Is something in, well, this epsilon is actually only there for the back reaction, but not really to treat the,
yes,
the higher order.
Exactly.
Higher order.
So that's why I was saying that, this formalism is very nice. So space adiabatic formalism is very nice in a way that we can use it for several different problems. And perhaps one could first have a look at higher orders cosmological perturbations, prepare like Hamilton constraint for these models, and then apply space adiabatic perturbation theory, which is a priori independent of the cosmological perturbation theory that we are using.
So basically here it would not be useful to compute three-point functions, for instance, because it might.
One could, but here we restrict to second order, to linearized cosmological perturbation theory and restrict action and Hamiltonian after second order.
You showed there are some terms that are order zero, some corrections to the.
Yes.
So can we see it again?
Yes.
This is to the dynamics of.
Okay.
So the field dynamics only, or both fields?
So this Hamiltonian is simply Hamilton constraint for the homogeneous decrease of freedom.
So it affects the dynamics of the homogeneous. How can I understand something that is? There is a green term. There is a green zero order term. Yeah.
Yes. So.
So how do we understand this physically?
The point is that.
This is G equal zero, so there is no definition happening.
Sorry.
So zero order means epsilon was kappa.
Zeroth order means that you decouple in a sense adiabatically gravitation and the matter decrease of freedom, which would be the limit of independent background actually.
So how is that there's an effect?
Ooh,
at zero
right.
order,
yeah, I mean you could just. I mean, up to now, if you consider linear perturbation theory, for example, you only have the background degrees of freedom. And then you say, OK, the fixed background is solved somehow. And then we put perturbations on it and evolve. And here, and the problem with this ansatz is that these perturbations should somehow back react on the background that we fixed before. So in order to implement these back reactions, we used this formalism. So it's actually then the first step that one should do if we go beyond linear perturbation theory in the cosmological perturbations.
But yeah, maybe it's a related question because epsilon is the relation between kappa and lambda. But even if you don't have matter, there could be back reaction.
Yeah, so I mean, this is this Casimir term that you're referring to.
No, just that you have also gravitons.
No, I mean, you could do. How could you do that? So in this case. Yeah, I think one would have to review how exactly then the kappa appears in the equations. But since you consider perturbations with respect, I mean, you consider the gravitons as perturbative degrees of freedom, then one could probably use space adiabatic perturbation theorem then with in terms of a perturbation parameter. Due to the smallness or the small amplitude of these gravitational.
So are the gravitons included, or is that only the scalar?
No, I mean, here we have full quantum gravitational back reactions. So we have these Mukhanov-Sasaki variables, and they depend linearly on the matter degrees of freedom, but also on the perturbations of the.
Does that include also the tensor mode?
Sorry?
Does that include also the tensor mode?
Yes, so I mean, here we have these tensor mode contributions also entering. So, yeah.
But you're treating them as if they also have this coupling lambda. In other words, you're using the same expansion parameter to.
Yes, yeah, I see the question.
So it's like embedding another spin to this massless. It's just not the thing that's sitting here.
Yeah.
My question.
Yeah, yeah. So at the moment, I would have to see exactly how one could write the Hamiltonian down and how these epsilons appear. But I would say that in this case, one could probably do perturbation theory due to the perturbative, cosmological perturbative character of the gravitons.
There's two different couplings, basically. I mean, there's coupling
yeah.
and itself, and then there's matter. And,
yeah, but I mean, also in this case, no. So I'm pretty sure that I mean the formalism. If we just switch off here the scalar modes, we still have the contributions from. Yeah, exactly. So also in the Hamilton constraint for this scheme. Oh no. Does it? Ah, okay, sorry. Yeah, so we would also have this perturbative parameter entering these equations. So, yeah, I mean, the kappa appears in any case. And so.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Also some rescaling of some variables at this point.
You mean this? Yeah, I mean the point is that. Yeah, yeah. So this is the technical part. Oops. Yeah. So the point is that in this picture, the homogeneous decrease of freedom really appear at slow decrease of freedom, and one can also show that this is justified because these homogeneous decrease of freedom appear as some heavy. How do you say? Schwerpunktkoordinaten. Center of mass coordinates. center of mass coordinates in comparison to these perturbative modes. So that's actually the physical intuition of this scheme. And therefore, I would also think that the tensor modes should appear as fast degrees of freedom since they are perturbations.
On that slide, can you elaborate more about the choice of the deformation quantization? Why is it useful in this context?
So we were thinking about the same questions because a priori, I mean, why should these homogeneous modes appear as slow modes in the sense compared to the perturbations? But we did this analysis, and indeed we defined these homogeneous modes as center of mass modes, and this is also the way that that the homogeneous degrees of freedom are entering the equations. And if we do so, one can show that indeed these perturbations appear as relative coordinates, and so we can see them as fastly moving decrease of freedom in comparison to the homogeneous decrease of freedom.
Still missing why this particular quantization is capturing.
So actually, this is due to this star product formalism. So only at the technical level, you see that. I have to see where it is. Here at the technical level, you see that if you construct these, just take for instance this equation, yes, and you construct iteratively these projection operators pi, and what you need is the Moyle product or the star product, and you see that the higher orders you take, you also have to use the star product up to the desired order in development. Yeah.
Any more questions? May I just quickly ask, so what do you expect in terms of observational consequences? Do you have any idea what will happen, or like how do you want to get that out? I mean, this is like the purpose of your looking at.
Yes. So first of all, it would be looking at orders of magnitude would be interesting to know whether these back reactions are really important, in particular for regions of the homogeneous phase space, which are interesting for quantum gravity, so Planck areas. So what we also we had a look actually at the simplified model, and we saw that these back reactions can act as a type of meta contribution, additional meta contribution. So I think I also have this on some backup slides. So there. So here we were actually computing the back reaction from only the zero mode of this. So this is the starting point, and we computed the back reaction of the zeros order inflaton field onto the homogeneous geometry. So actually the same as before, but cutting down to only one mode of the inflaton field. We also obtained non-trivial contributions to the back reactions. And I mean, if you do then, if you at least at a classical level, you evaluate this Hamilton constraint, you see that you have additional contributions here for the Friedmann equation consisting of additional metaterms, curvature and metaterms. So this is would be the first step in order to check what kind of dynamics or what kind of meta sources perhaps could we compare these back reaction terms.
When you include higher order modes, would they contribute in a similar way or subleaving to this? So would this be
That's a good question. So as we see, so the Hamilton constraint that we computed indicates actually the opposite. So as you see here, we have zeroth order contributions also if we take the full perturbative scheme. So yeah, that's still not clear how these effects then really interact at the end with the homogeneous modes.
Any more questions? Let's thank them again.